This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Linmark Kusuchwang and Wong Xiaoning, where we've been running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, because the Graduates at Work initiative under Budget 2020 proposes a 500 ringgit incentive for graduates hired after 12 months of unemployment. Could this hurt fresh graduates who've been unemployed for less than 12 months? Do let us know what you think. You've still got about 10 minutes left to weigh in on that poll, because even though this initiative has been widely hailed as a significant incentive to address graduate unemployment, there is some concern over the fact that it only covers those who have been jobless for at least 12 months and also excludes fresh grads.
Yeah, so I talked about this with Johan Merican. He's the guy that formulated the policy. And I think there's a little bit of truth in what he said, because, you know, if you're jobless, you want to get a job as soon as possible. And waiting 12 months to deploy an incentive, you know, might not be feasible. It of course, for a fiscally strapped household, that's not feasible. But for example, if you are 10 months jobless, and then, you know, you could get this incentive for the next 24 months, you might wait two more months just to get this incentive, right?
Yeah, true. Right? I mean, it's just a short-term pain for a longer-term gain, isn't it?
Exactly, something along those lines. Mm. And I like the fact that policymakers are understanding the difficulties and making win-win for everybody. But there's always gaps. There's always things that fall between the gaps.
I mean, the reality is that we just have too many unemployed graduates and something needs to be done about them. But whether this Graduates at Work's initiative is the best way to go about it is, I guess, the big question. Because if we really want to look at structural reform in terms of matching graduates with jobs, are we then producing the right kind of graduates?
Yeah, so I asked him that as well, because, you know, I know he can't have direct autonomy, management over specific ministries, but the biggest portion of Budget 2020, 65 billion ringgit, goes to the Education Ministry, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason why 140,000 graduates below the age of 24 years old, as of 2018, are unemployed. Clearly, there's something wrong, because CEOs that come through here, they say there's a war for talent. They can't find enough data scientists, analytics, computer programmers, designers, animators, things like that. So why aren't we've got the most universities we've ever had in the history of the country, and more public private universities than ever before? Why are they not filling the gap?
I think there's like two points to this, right? One is, yes, we have the highest level of graduates and the most number of universities. But I hate to say this, the truth is, are they really graduates of a certain quality that employers want? And secondly, if they are quality graduates, are we then, in a way, giving them courses that the market doesn't need anymore or doesn't want anymore? That our education system is so behind the curve in terms of what the demands are out there.
Sure. Because at the end of the day, right, you choose your degree and then 3 years later, it's only 3 years later that you're out in the job market. And the labour landscape is such as it is now that 3 years can actually wreak a lot of difference on what employability actually looks like. And there is also the problem of the fact that we do have a lot of private universities, and I don't think there's a lot of really of oversight in terms of the quality of education that they put out. And at the end of the day, because private universities, you know, they're in it. You're in it for the money, right? And you want to bring more students into your institution. You want to charge them for their courses, but there's no guarantee that that these students will be able to take those courses and actually turn them into actual paying jobs at the end of the day. I guess the other interesting thing that came out of this whole discussion about Graduates at Work was from an employer's perspective, because the Malaysian Employers Federation has also weighed in on this, and they have said that the policy would reduce the employability of fresh graduates, because companies do also get an incentive for hiring those who have been unemployed for more than a year.
Yeah, so for 24 months, the employer gets 500 ringgit a month incentive from the government for hiring someone who's been jobless for a year. And that kind of makes sense, fiscally at least, for, you know, especially if you're an SME, for example, and you've just been told to hike your minimum wage from 1,100 to 1,200. And 1,500, 2,000 is obviously the long-term target. So you would want to, at least from a numbers crunching perspective, defray some of that cost.
What will really be awful is if people kind of be very clever about it and then offer these unemployed graduates a contract for just 2 years.
Yeah.
So they benefit from this 300 ringgit incentive. Then after 24 months, tell the poor graduate, hey, thanks, you know, everybody's happy. And then, you know, the poor guy is out on the street again. I mean, then we are not really resolving the issue. The other thing I'd like to highlight, which I feel for a lot of Malaysian students, is that they take these loans to go to university and then they can't find a job. So it's almost like a double whammy, right?
Well, they take loans or their parents refinance their homes or they go into huge amounts of debt. And if you go to any education fair right now in Mid Valley, right, for example, you look through the curriculum of any university, you see like things like accounting, mass comm, law, engineering. With the exception of engineering, and it depends on which engineering, right? Mass comm, law, medicine costs you three arms and two legs if you had that many limbs, and you'll still be bankrupt after that. And you come out and you're a GP after 5 years, right? What's your income nowadays? Your GPs don't make any more money.
In fact, GPs are closing down at an alarming rate.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So why are universities charging over R1 million a year, for the cost, right, to come out and be destitute? It doesn't make sense. Why aren't they offering computer science, for example, or data analytics? And if you go to Google and you do an online course for a year, I'd guarantee you get a job at any of the telcos.
Yeah, so there has to be this real shift in terms of what universities offer, right? And it has to be relevant to current markets. So perhaps all those traditional courses that you, Chuang, and I did are kind of like wasted.
I did law.
In
the US, right? Lawyers are being disrupted by technology. They've got robots that can dole out, judgments in milliseconds.
Yeah, I think law, accountancy, engineering and medicine are generally the big four, yeah, right? Careers, yeah, that everyone wants their child to go into. But realistically, how much are those careers going to change within the next 5 years? And nobody can really tell you that for sure. So it's the greatest uncertainty that is the problem right now. And taking a look at the poll that we've been running on the BFM Twitter account, we asked the question of, could this Graduates at Work initiative hurt fresh graduates who have been unemployed for less than 12 months? And actually, we received 126 votes. 47% said yes, it could hurt fresh grads. 30% said no. 23% said maybe. And taking a look at some of the responses to the poll, YM Fu says the incentive is utterly unfair for taxpayers. The government should fix the root problems in education.
Exactly. That's the point I was trying to make. But we know this. I mean, Malaysians all know the problems with the education providers, and look no further than wealthy middle class households or even cabinet ministers and where they send their children, not even for university, for school as well. Right?
Private schools,
mm-hmm, are off to the UK, Australia, the US, Canada, and then universities abroad. They're not sending their kids to universities in Malaysia.
The fear is that the gap will just get wider, actually, in terms of the quality that the different types of graduates that come out of university in Malaysia, if you ask me. I mean, even when we see CVs, they vary so much. The question is the big bulk in the middle, what do we do with them, whether we are offering them alternatives. Maybe this whole conversation about TVET has to be taken more seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yvonne Kaur has also said, though, that I think this initiative should be the other way around, to encourage graduates to look for jobs. I think I think graduates are looking for jobs is the problem. But the difficulty is that whether or not they are taken up by the companies, because maybe their skills are not what the companies are looking for, or maybe they've come out of a university with a degree that with a training that doesn't match the degree that they have been awarded. So they're not necessarily up to the actual task of the skills that are needed.
Yeah, I mean, governments and policymakers are in a way bootstrapped by their necessity to cater to all stakeholders. I think the real solution lies in the parents and the children themselves. They have got to take charge. They've got to take charge of their futures, and they should not rely on governments and policies to solve their futures for them.
But they've what got happens to realize, if you are a parent that is not so aware? And let's be honest, there are some parents out there, right? Or children that are mm-hmm. not so aware of what the options are. And, then who guides them? Because some of us need guidance along the way, right?
Well, then Charles Darwin's law applies, right?
That's a really sad fact.
That's unfortunate, but it's the way of the world.
That is really unfortunate, because it just means that people will get left behind in the situation. But also continuing our Budget 2020 discussion this morning, there were six key tax proposals highlighted under the new budget. So to make Malaysia the preferred destination for investment as well as indirect tax. And the government decided to continue with its plan to introduce a service tax on digital services in order to increase indirect tax revenue, because they reiterated that GST contributed significantly to to higher prices, and by replacing it with the SST, the country's inflation rate has reduced, so the GST will not be reintroduced.
Yeah, so of course those are related to indirect taxes as opposed to direct taxes. And then there's a third initiative where it comes to innovation and intellectual property. So qualifying income generated from patents and copyright software to be given 100% income tax exemption for up to 10 years. And that's a big deal because it's a bit like that pioneer tax status, right? So the digital, under digital, the initiatives proposed as part of the government's vision to build digital Malaysia include 25 million ringgit to set up a contestable matching grant fund to spur pilot projects on digital apps, and 20 million to MDAC to grow local champions in creating digital content like in e-games, animation and digital. So on that front, also some goodies there.
Yeah, and there's also continued focus on the SMEs because they make up 98.5% of business establishments in Malaysia, which actually contribute close to 39% of the country's GDP in 2018.
Yes, and there are, of course, more expectations for the SMEs to grow their GDP contribution going forward. So unsurprising then that Budget 2020 should have some things in store for them. But for more on this morning, we have on the line with us Amarjit Singh, EY ASEAN and Malaysia tax leader at Ernst & Young. Thank you for joining us, Amarjit. Now, how does Budget 2020 address some of the concerns that Malaysia is not as competitive as an investment destination when compared to our ASEAN peers? I mean, for example, Vietnam has seen the most significant FDI inflow in the last few years and is also the largest beneficiary of the substitution effect from the US-China trade war, while we rank a third.
So I think that the first thing is really about the tone of the speech in itself. The first strategic thrust of the budget was really about making Malaysia the preferred investment destination. So it sent a very strong positive message, setting the tone that the government is serious in attracting and retaining quality investments. A whole series of incentives were announced. The biggest announcement was about for the multinational corporations, $1 billion per year allocation for customized incentive packages for 5 years. So you're looking at $1 billion each year for 5 years to attract targeted Fortune 500 companies and global unicorns in selected sectors, high technology, manufacturing, creative and new economic sectors to Malaysia. There's also the for the E&E sector, in addition to the 10 years income tax exemption, for companies that have whose RA has expired, they're also looking at another round of investment tax allowance at the rate of 50%. Then there's also the establishment of a special channel under InvestKL to attract investments from China. I can go on. So there are quite a number of incentives just specifically on making Malaysia the preferred investment destination.
There's also a strategic push to attract targeted Fortune 500 companies and global unicorns by offering $1 billion ringgit per year allocation for customized incentive packages for 5 years. But what are the attached conditions for these companies, Amarjit?
So far, we've only got the speech. So based on the speech, the incentive is targeted at certain sectors. So high technology, manufacturing, creative, and new economic sectors. No clarification given so far on what are the new economic sectors. I'm assuming it could involve the new sectors such as digital, for example. And to qualify for the incentives, these companies must invest at least RM5 billion in Malaysia to generate additional economic activities that will in turn support the small, medium enterprises and the creation of jobs, not just jobs, but high-quality jobs. So what we expect is guidelines to be issued sometime soon to set out the criteria. That's one way. And the other way is, there may not be a public sort of a document on guidelines. This will just be as a part of government's initiatives to target certain sectors. And, and this could come out through trade missions when government goes out for trade missions.
Thank you very much, Amarjit. And that was Amarjit Singh, EY ASEAN and Malaysia tax leader at Ernst & Young. And much like Amarjit, I think we also are still awaiting more details on the plan because so far we're all still going off the speech. So more Budget 2020 coverage for you coming up soon, no doubt. Right now, though, heading into the 7:30 news and after that, more international stories. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.